Here is a very important statement regarding relativism. A length of reading step can decrease the smooth function. And here is a simple proof. So let's say for therapy at the initial point, we use first order Taylor expansion for the last point. And here we use first order Taylor expansion of L C I this point as the initial point, theta zero. That's why L theta 1 is equal to L theta 0, and we take gradient of L as the expand point L theta 0 and theta 1 as theta 0. So that's the first order approximation of this at this point. And this is exactly the same formula for the first order condition of convex operation. Wait for Fy. We have a first order Taylor expansion of Fy evaluated at a particular x. And here, in that circumstances, y is from theta 1, x is from theta 0. And here, according to this relativism step, theta 1 minus theta 0 is equal to negative alpha, lambda theta. L theta 0. And we have this transpose, this is equal to L transverse of lambda L theta 0. And since this is not equal to 0 and alpha is sufficiently small, so why alpha should be sufficiently small? Here, why alpha should be sufficiently small in this case? Because we are taking first order Taylor expansion, right? And to make the first equation accurate enough, we need to require alpha sufficiently small. And we have L theta 1 minus L theta 0 is equal to negative alpha, L transverse of this gradient is greater less than 0. And for sufficiently small alpha to make this accurate enough, theta 1 is in so that's why the negative gradient step is sufficiently small learning rate is guaranteed to increase the function. And the mathematical tool to prove it is Taylor expansion for n-dimensional functions. And in gradient descent, the initial point matters, so consider this figure. We have different initial points. So the final convergence depends on a lot of initial points. So to prove population, we run GD mod onto different evaluation and get the best minimum of all time. So learning rate also matters. If alpha is too big, GD moves more quickly with big risk of the algorithm level converge. As in this and if alpha is too small, GD moves slowly, so you may adjust the expressions and evaluate the here, we set the rate for a slow learning rate, and it takes around 100 iterations to get your opinion for this particular function. So unfortunately, the no mass fully exists to find the perfect learning rate. You have to test the constant to be the best. This is the case, especially in training your levels. You need to specify proper learning rate and learning schedule. Yes, we will be introduced in next. computational cost for GDI each iteration is on order of O, M is the number of training parameters for linear design. Why is that? Because we need to average the gradient over N training parameters, right? So it's prohibitive to scale up to huge data set. Then we introduce stochastic gradient descent, or STD for short, which reduces the computational cost at each iteration to a 1. So at this situation, we randomly sample a single training example that is written from the theta t. Instead of, in the previous case, instead of average over all training examples, we randomly select a single training example. So in expectation, SGD is just gradient descent, right? Expectation of the gradient of one particular sample. To approach the estimation, we take an average over the examples, the gradient over the training sample, that's gradient descent. That's gradient. And here is some visualization of gradient descent and stochastic gradient descent. And we will have a smooth trajectory for gradient descent because the gradient is average over all training samples. And we have very zigzagging trajectories for stochastic gradient descent. And as you see, stochastic gradient descent is not guaranteed to descend your loss function. You may increase your loss function at some particular equations. So advantage of stochastic gradient descent, it's easy to fit into memory. And computational fast with a single example in each situation. We don't need to wait to compute all gradients, the gradient of all examples and average the gradient, then we do the update. Once computed the gradient of one single example, we do the update. And the step has both oscillations, which may not optimal to get some bad notebook. And this advantage the step algorithm. The object that always decreasing in each step and it will take number of virtual convergence. And we use the advantage of that rest of patient side to deal with only a single time at a time. So as a compromise, we have mini batch gradient descent, which random sample is small subset of training data per script D, which is a subset of this training set D at T situation and compute the gradient to alpha theta T. Here theta T plus one iteration is equal to theta T minus alpha. The gradient evaluated at this particular subset of mini batch and is equal to theta T minus alpha 1 over the cardinality, the number of examples in this mini batch and the samples in the mini batch from alpha L x, y divided at theta T. And the mini batch gradient descent and its random are extremely popular and extensively used in deep learning. And we are going to learn the variance of mini batch gradient descent as when we introduce deep learning population techniques. And this will summary begin this lecture. So convex simulation, we have convex set, we have convex function. Convex function in two conditions. One, the input domain is a convex set, and this equation is satisfied. Method is directly convexity by definition, by first order condition, and by second order condition. And a numerical condition method, GD, guarantees to decrease your loss as long as you have a sufficient small learning rate. It's not scalable for the past data set because you average the gradient over all examples in 20 set. SGD should be fast to compute with noisy degrees and have constant response. And in mini batch, GD will compromise between gradient descent and stochastic gradient descent. And it is a de facto method used to be inferred. examples of discriminated middle-class products, not just for oppression, which use the maximum natural framework to run the separating other brain. Today we'll introduce a second example, SVM, which is a purely, not for this, but purely geometric approach. So linearly separable data, for now assume the training data is linearly separable, which means that the two classes in the training set can be separated by a line or a hyperplane. And for the case of iris data, it can be separated by a line. So the question is, which is the best separating line? We have a lot of possible inference number of lines that can separate the two classes. So which is the best separating line? So according to the principle of maximum margin, we define the distance between the separating line and the closest point as the margin. And here, so if this is a boundary, this is the closest point, also known as the margin point. So this is the margin. And you can think of the space as an amount of wiggle room for accommodating errors in estimating the space vector. So the idea is to separate, the best separate line is the one that maximizes the margin. And it puts the most distance between the first point and the decision margin. And here, we choose four decision boundary and the corresponding margin lines. So which one is the best among these four, according to the maximum margin principle? So the one with the maximum margin is the best, right? Which is this one. And the follow-up question is this the optimal one? Do we have a better separating line than this? Yes or no? So you guys need to really think about this kind of high-level questions, which will make you easier to understand the underlying principles of this kind of line. Is this the optimal separating plane according to the principle of maximum margin? So this is not the optimal one. Because we can move this up from a little bit to increase the margin until this margin touches this point. Right? So by symmetry, there should be at least one margin point on each side of the boundary. Otherwise, we can move the decision boundary a little bit to the side with no margin point. And by doing so, we increase the margin a little bit. And we get a better separate higher plane according to the principle of maximum margin. Right? Therefore, the point on the margins I call the support vectors. So that's the definition of support vectors. Support vectors is the points nice on the margin. And the points, these are the points for defining the margin. And we should have support vectors on both sides of the margin. Then, the principle of maximum margin, and the first question is, we need to compute the margin. So how to compute the margin? So what is the margin? Either distance of this hyperplane after which transpose x plus b with respect to a point. It's this one. Right. So now let's prove it. Here we have this hyperplane, and this is x, y. Where in this case y is positive. All right. Then we can create a unit vector w divided by its length, L to norm. This is the unit vector point in the center direction as W. Right? And now let's denote this distance as D. We move x towards the negative direction, this direction, by the amount of d. By doing so, we project this point onto this plane. Right? We move x to the left direction of the unit this vector by the amount of d. D is a distance, d is a margin. So here, by doing so, we project this x onto this plane. And this point should lie on the plane, and it must satisfy this equation. Right? Here it's so for D. It's W transpose X plus B minus E of the transpose W divided by the normal W. And we look up the transpose W is equal to L to norm squared. Right? L to norm squared divided by L to norm. And this is equal to L to norm. And so for P we have W transpose X plus B divided by L to norm. And we are done. So in this case, Y is equal to 1, right? We can multiply by 1. So this is the way to compute the margin. This is the margin. Respect to one point. So if the point, so if the point lies here, xy, where y is negative, how to project this point onto the plane? And here we denote this distance as d. We move x along this direction, right? By the amount of d. So here, this becomes a plus. We solve for d, we have a negative one in front. And the negative one, the label is negative one. Again, we can replace this negative one with one. And we can write the two cases compactly into this expression. So Pi is equal to 1i times y double transpose x plus b divided by the normal w. So any question on this? On how to compute the margin. So you need to understand the very first step in order to understand the whole support vector machine. We need to compute the whole the margin of the hyperplane with the vector point. Right? So this is the margin. the geometric margin, and the numerator yi times x plus cos xi, w plus cos xi, that has been called the function margin. Then, here is the next question, what is the margin of this hyperplane with respect to local points, not to the training set, but consists of 10 points. We define the margin with respect to the training set as the margin of the closed point, right? So B is the minimal of all the distance. Of course, all three examples. Minimum of bi for I from 1 to m. Right? That's minimal x, y, for example, y plus a, which are the ways of this version. So this is the margin of this hyperplane with respect to 27. Then you first identify the close point to the margin and compute the margin. That's right. We encounter this minimization problem in order to compute the margin with respect to the training set. Right? So this is the margin. And we need to maximize the margin according to the principle of maximizing the margin. Then you get the intuition that in order to solve SVM, we encounter a minimum operation problem. Right? The maximum in out there, the minimum in the in there. So let's write the explicit. Then the maximum margin solution is found by solving this problem. Maximize the margin, right? We find the optimum WB that maximizes this margin with respect to training set. And this is very difficult problem and non-convex problem as well. So are we done? Are we doing it? Not necessarily. We can transform it into an equivalent convex operation problem by exploiting its properties. So notice that if we make this scaling, W is equal to gamma W, D is equal to gamma B, the object function is unchanged. Right? So this is known as a scale ambiguity. If we find the optimal W and B, if we find the optimal W and B, and we can multiply by any number, so this A W and A W star and A B star is also optimal. It will have the same, exactly the same object function. Right? Then we can play with this scale factor gamma. We can play this scale factor gamma such that the margin is equal to 1. We can work with a particular gamma such that this margin is equal to 1. This means that all function margins should be greater or equal to 1 for all three examples, because the minimum is equal to 1. The function margin for all three examples should be greater than or equal to 1. Right? Then this problem, this optimization here becomes maximized WB 1 over, right? Because this whole term is equal to 1. And then we have minimal personal WB. Right? And we do not work with, this is L2, we do not work with square root. Right? We can take the squares. The optimum bubble will not change because it's R max. And since these squares, we by convention, we put a 1 over 2 in front. Because when we take the derivative, there is a 2 up here, right? is this. Given a 20 set, we optimize, minimize W while working front. Instead of work with L2 norm, we work with L2 norm squared. And this is our constraint. The function margin for all two examples is greater than or equal to 1. This is the convex optimization problem. This is not. Because this problem suffers from scaling ambiguity. And this problem does not suffer from scaling ambiguity. That's why we, by exploring the scaling ambiguity, we can convert a possibly non-convex optimization problem into a convex optimization problem. So the objective minimize the inverse of the margin distance and maximize the geometric margin. And the inequality constraint ensure that all points are either on or outside of the function margin because we define the function margin should be is equal to 1. And the function margin is set to the distance of 1 from the function. And some students may ask, why is magic number 1? Why is it not 2, not 3, or not 5? For the sake of solving support vector machines, we can say any constant that should be 5. 1, 2, 3, equivalent, because it corresponds to a different gamma. But in terms of comparing different loss functions, so setting this function from margin to 1, it's easier to compare or visualize the underlying loss functions in SVM and compare it with other loss functions that are different, as you can see. Right? That's why we set this to be equal to 1. And prediction, given a new data point x bar, we use the sign of linear function to predict the class. Same as in the case of Node.js regression. So why is maximizing margin good? So we have two aspects to simplify this problem. One is the true weight vector uncertainty. So maximizing the margin allows the most uncertainty. While keeping all points correctly classified. And the data point are uncertain because we may encounter some measurement errors when we compare to the ratios. So maximum margin allows the most vague room for the points while keeping all points correctly classified. Right? And so we can make the decision boundary snappily and all points are correctly classified. So we can use the data points slightly and very fast for our points. That's why we need to maximize the margin. So is hard margin enough? So no, why is it? Here we should two cases. The first is we encounter this noise example. And if we don't have this example, the descending boundary is this dashed straight line. If we add this example, the descending boundary moves from this dashed line to this left line. So this noise example affects the descending boundary a lot. Which means that it's very, the hard margin version of SVM is very sensitive to noise. And we, originally we have very large margin. To accommodate, to correct in class with this noise number, we have very small margin. And this is one way to sensitive. The second way is, the data is almost linearly separable, but it's not linearly separable. If we work with primary form, hard margin merchant based lending, my notebook found a favorable solution. There is no type of claim, but I'm satisfied with it. There is no favorable decent market, right? Therefore, so we can use the same in your class, but we allow some training example to validate the margin. It can be inside the margin. It can even be classified the closest decent number. But we need to quantify the amount of validation for each example and add them together and penalize this violation. Right? We don't encourage it, we allow it to be validated, but we don't encourage it to be validated. We need to get some penalty. That's why for each training example, we define a slight variable. So if we have a total of n training numbers, we have a total of n slight variables. So Ci is equal to 0 means sample I is outside of the margin error. So this is examples corresponding to this is equal to 0. Because it's outside of this margin error and it's correctly classified, we don't get the penalty. And Ci is greater than 0 means the sample is inside the margin error. And we want to make this Ci as small as possible. We allow it to be greater than 0, but we want to be small. And here is the SVM Transform Soft Margin version. Right? So let's first look at the constraint. So originally we want all the function margin to be greater than or equal to 1. But we here, right, we give some slackness. It can be less than 1. It can be even 0 or even negative. And the Ci should be greater than or equal to 0. And this is the total amount of violation. We need to minimize this violation. Alright. And here you see, for these two, the Ci is equal to 0. For this one, the Ci is equal to 0. We don't have any penalty. And this on the boundary, Ci is 0. Boundary, Ci is 0. And for this three, C1, C2, C3, those are within the margin, or even misclassified for these three numbers. Right? That's why we need to minimize this for those three. And we add a hyperparameter as penalty for violating the margin. So small value means a lot more violation, large value means a lot more violation. So any question on this? So the effect of C, right? If C is small, we allow more violations. You see there are a lot of samples not within the margin area. And if C is large, we don't encourage violation. We penalize a lot of violation. You see the margin is very small because we don't want 84 and within the margin area. And in our case, we need to make the margin area as small as possible. But after all, we are wrong. And in the case of primal form, estimating the soft margin is equivalent to minimize this function. So now let's establish the equivalence. Here, for Ci, we have two constraints, right? Ci should be greater than or equal to 0. And this, Ci, we move this to the left-hand side, move this to the right-hand side. Ci should be greater than or equal to 1 minus Yi times W transpose X. I plus B. Okay? And because that should be not around those values, therefore, because the n should be greater than or equal to the maximum of these two values. We have one step left. We replace this Cxi with its normal bound. So how to understand this? So here, this is Cxi. This is its lower bound. So the right-hand side is its lower bound, right? And we minimize the lower bound, it's minimization, right? We want to, instead of minimize Cxi, we want to minimize this lower bound. And we set Cxi to a tangent lower bound, right? Instead of minimizing Cxi, we first minimize the lower bound and set the Cxi to its lower bound, not twice. Therefore, we have this expression, and we can move this C here to C. And we can absorb this 2 into this C. This becomes 1 over C. That's why we have 1 over C. Hamiltonian squares. See, and we have this one. Sum the working examples in maximum 0, 1 minus 1i, double transpose xi plus b. This is 1i, and this is f of xi, and we can define the whole term as 3i, similar as in the case of the logistic equation. And from it, we can treat this as some form of regularizer, right? And hinge nodes, we can define the hinge nodes, the maximum 0, 1, minus 3. So it takes tens of years from engineers to estimate. From engineers, we have estimate prime form hard margin, then we have prime soft margin by adding step arrows. And then we establish the optimization, this optimization problem to the previous optimization problems. Name from which we have the principles. And this is a figure for functionals. For the I, positive grade classified, negative incorrect classified. We have marginals, linearly marginals. This is linear. Linearly marginals for guidance classified samples. We have non-zero for samples on the real margin. We have zero rows for samples on the left side of the margin. So 0, 1 loss. So both the logistic loss and the hinge loss are convex relaxation of this 0, 1 loss. Right? If, let's say, if Z is negative, this are equal to 0. If this event is true, it means this sample is misclassified. And the indicator function will give you 1. 1 indicates the sample is misclassified. Right, remember z is equal to y and fx. We should have y and fx at the same sign in order to make the correct classified. If it's negative, it's opposite sign. It's misclassified. If the negative is true, the indicator function will give you 1. Right, that's true. Therefore, this is either 1 means we have a least traffic lamp that still needs to split that 010. And the average 010 over the SLE is exactly the transportation error rate. And this is the most accurate lamp to minimize, because we really want to minimize the transportation error rate. But this is, in general, computational indicator, and we need to do the need for several loss function. So here we draw the figure for 0-1 loss, pinch loss, exponential loss, and logistic loss. The exponential loss is defined as here. And we use the developer model, algorithm sharing algorithm, and you get the flavor. So here from this figure, there are several interesting observations. Why? 0-1 loss is computationally inferior. Think about it. Why 0-1 loss is computationally inferior? The gradient is zero almost everywhere. Right? The gradient of this 0-1 loss is zero, exactly zero, almost everywhere. Except for this continuous point, zero, where the gradient is not defined. That's why you cannot use this as a loss function and take the gradient decent, because it's zero. And here, if let's say if this is equal to 1, right? If this is equal to 0, the total term is equal to 1. That's why the exponential loss will traverse 0, 1. And maximum 0, 1 minus z, if this is 0, the total term is 1. So the pinch loss will traverse this 0, 1. And here, what's interesting is logistic loss. So what's logistic loss? Logistic loss is log 1 plus x of negative z. If we work with log of base 2, if z is 0, this is 1. 1 plus 1 is 2. Log 2 of 2 is 1, right? It also should traverse this point, right? But it's below this point, the curve is below this point. Why is that? So if we draw figures like this, you should immediately realize that the log may be in order to draw a figure. But if it's 2, if the log is base 2, the logistic function would also traverse this point. Right? You can draw your own version of the logistic function that traverses exactly this point. That's why we, in SVM, we need to set the margin to be 1 to make it traverse this point, to make it easier to be compared with other cross functions. That's it. It's the same philosophy for setting the norm for logistic, the base of the norm for the logistic function to be equal to 2 instead of other bases such as natural norm or norm of temperature. Alright? So, any question on this figure? Alright. So, multi class classifier. Right? We have one vertex 1. 1 versus 2, 1 versus 3, 2 versus 3. To label, we pick the class with the most votes, majority votes among all binary classifiers. And the problem is very slow, where there are a lot of classifiers. So if there are 3 classifiers, we need to train, say, and C selects 2, which is C times C minus 1 divided by 2. And we can also look at one versus the rest multi-class classification. One versus 2-3, versus 1-3, versus 1-2. To label sample, we pick the class with the largest geometric function. And this is a decision boundary for three class iris data. And I think it's one versus the rest, because we only choose three class. And here is the decision boundary. And if you remember for logistic regression, right? So the decision boundary is piecewise like here. And here we have this point for SVM. Converging point. So now let's do a SVM summary. So classifier again is linear. Given a new sample, we predict based on the sign of this linear function. And training, we maximize the margin of the training data. And maximize the separation point of the SVM margin. And you need to know how to compute the margin of a hyperbandwidth at one point with respect to the training set. And you how to maximize the margin. And you how to convert this maximize. Approximation in addition into a convex regression plot. And we allow some training to validate the margin. We use cross validation to pick the hyperparameter C. And a summary of linear classifiers is separate the data using a linear surface hyperplane. And there are two combinations. One is logistic regression. We maximize the probability for natural of the data, and the underlying loss function is logistic loss. And logistic loss is a convex loss function. And in this course, we have proved that this is a convex by taking the second order derivative of the logistic function, and the second order derivative is greater than zero. And support vector merchant will maximize the margin to have a bend. And the underlying loss function is the hinge loss. And I highly encourage us to prove that the hinge loss is also a convex function. The hinge loss function is also a convex function. And the logistic regression push the decision classification as far as possible for all points. And for spell-based machine, we ensure a margin of 1 between boundary and the closed box function 1. And we have already given a reason why we set this function margin to be 1 instead of other constant. Right? If you understand the figure that we recite, the figure of comparing different box functions. So I love this. Let's work with high dimensional feature and has no generalization error and in OTX. And the logistic regression has very fine probabilities. This boundary to the descending surface can only be linear. So in the next lecture, we'll see how to deal with non-linear descending surface, non-linear descending surface. Alright? So, and we have a lecture 3.3, which is a step-by-step walkthrough of implementation of logistic regression. I haven't had time to add it. And we use the equivalence formulation where the left label is zero, which corresponds to the cross entropy loss. And we have the gradient working for you. Right? And in the next lecture, so I have made a detailed derivation of the gradient descent of logistic regression, either in the location system of negative 1, positive 1, and the location system of 0, 1, and we compare different